This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Kate Delaney, thanks so much for joining us. Hope you had a wonderful weekend, or at least had a chance to kick back and stock up and do whatever it is that you need to get ready for the week. And what an interesting week this is going to be. This is the week we're going to find out about whether or not the affidavit that was used in that search warrant at Mar-a-Lago, the shakedown at the former president's house in Florida, what was in it. And remember, the former president said, release it, let people know, transparency. But there will be some redactions, that's for sure. But the judge, I think, was leaning toward doing that. And Thursday is probably the day we'll find out, or at least that's the deadline for the Department of Justice to put in their request for the redactions if he rules that it would be popped open. So this is something to watch because we're all curious. I mean, it became bigger and bigger and bigger because this hasn't happened before. And I'm curious, and I'm curious as to whether or not they're going to do it or not. Senator Lindsey Graham gets a break. He doesn't have to testify in the Georgia election investigation. It's on hold anyway. He was supposed to be there on Tuesday. He was going to testify in as to what he knew about the 2020 election loss in Georgia, but it's on a temporary hold anyway. The district judge denied Graham's request to quash his subpoena on Friday and rejected the effort, you know, to put the decision on hold while he appealed. And his lawyers did appeal to the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, because that's what you do. But on Sunday, a three-judge panel of appeals issued the order temporarily pausing that judge's order in declining to quash the subpoena. So that's gobbledygook. I'll cut through the law ease. Basically, he doesn't have to testify, right? There's a temporary stay, I'll call it. And eventually that may happen, but it's not happening right now. Because the claim is that there were calls. There were phone calls between, well, we know there was phone calls between Donald Trump and the Georgia Secretary of State. And during that conversation, Trump suggested he could find the votes needed to overturn the narrow loss in the state. Or there was, you heard the conversation was played all over the place. So they're saying they want to ask Graham about two phone calls they say he made. They're saying he made phone calls and his staff after the general election. And in those calls, he asked about reexamining certain absentee ballots in Georgia in order to explore the possibility of a more favorable outcome. That's why this has become a thing and why he's going to be asked to testify about whether that happened or not. But for now, it's on hold. And I think this week, the focus is going to be on the affidavit of what were they searching for. I mean, what were they searching for, these documents that the ex-president, the former president, says were unclassified? What was in that affidavit that prompted the search? Whew. It's like I've just jumped through five hoops to explain this, right? Yes. All right, here's something in your neighborhood that you want to be aware of, especially if you're in the Midwest. You know how the weekends are. You're whipped. Or during the week, the beginning of the week, you just say, you know what? We're just having fast food. So you pull into whatever fast food place. Wendy's is actually pulling lettuce from sandwiches because they've got an E. coli breakout that they're trying to track down. And this is restaurants in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania because people have gotten ill after eating them. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said heading into the weekend they're trying to determine whether romaine lettuce is the source of the E. coli outbreak that has sickened at least 37 people, and whether romaine used at Wendy's was also served or sold at other businesses, because, you know, that's that wild tracing that you have to do to figure out what farms they came from, how they were processed, and all of that. And you know what? I do pay attention to this stuff. I pay attention to this stuff because I got food poisoning. I don't know if I talked about this on the air. I got food poisoning probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it was awful. I mean, it was awful. I was scared. I had, because I really haven't, I don't get sick that much. So, you know, if I'm not on the air and I'm sick, I am sick. And I was super, super sick. And it was definitely food poisoning. And it came from lettuce, but I think it came from me not realizing. See, this is what happens. Trying to eat healthy, making green shakes. And I had some of that kale. I cannot eat kale. Sorry, I cannot eat kale on its own. And I was putting it in those power shakes, making these power shakes. And I think it was outdated. I didn't know it was outdated because I'm really good at looking at that stuff. So you got to be so careful in the washing of everything that you know, especially vegetables, that kind of stuff. And it was just a great reminder to me because it was scary, scary bad. And, you know, food poisoning can last, I guess, up to a week. It did not last a week, but it was a couple of days where the first day was the worst. But and many of you may have had this, so you totally relate to what I'm saying. But then as I got, you know, 1 or 2 days into it, then I finally started to feel better. So be careful out there with, you know, pay attention to whatever those warnings are. But they're taking the lettuce off, so that is a very, very, very good thing. This is scary. Monkeypox is no big deal until it is a big deal. So New York reported their first known case of monkeypox in a child under 18. What they're saying is the kid or the county where the case was reported wasn't specified in the report anyway, but it was in New York City. But they're saying that there's 2,700 something confirmed monkeypox cases in New York as of Friday, and it seems like they're the epicenter of the outbreak. So they're trying to find more vaccines, they're trying to get testing spots, and they're trying to educate people on how to stay safe during the outbreak. But it's not good when you hear that a child got it, because the fear is, you know, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal, but now it's spreading to all kinds of younger kids. Is it going to spread to more, or no, this was just a rare freak thing? I mean, you got to all these health things. But when we first heard about monkeypox, oh, no big deal. Then, oh, there's not enough vaccines. Oh, there's it's just same sex guys that are the population that are being affected by this, and it's not just, but they're being affected by it, and now, is it spreading to other populations? Yeah. And here's something that, because I live in the lightning capital of the country, or at least one of them anyway, it's really strange that this may be something that's happening or has been talked about in your neck of the woods. But boy, have there been a lot of lightning strikes. We had those people that died, sadly, the three people in Washington, D.C., and there was a lightning strike near an elementary school in an area not far from where I live, where it's just simple. She's walking the dog, she's taking one of her children to the school to pick up the other one, then lightning hits an area where she is and she dies, and they try to revive her but they can't. Sad. But the other kid survives, thank goodness. All right, stay with us, much more coming your way.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Are you watching your retirement savings melt away right in front of your eyes as the economy crumbles? Well, if you have an IRA, 401k, or similar account, I need to tell you about a better way that was revealed by a Wall Street Journal best-selling book. Simply put, you can opt out of the insanity and convert your existing retirement account into the most stable physical asset in history, physical gold and silver. Plus, this conversion might qualify you for an IRS loophole that could save you even more. Today, Advantage Gold is giving away a completely free audiobook version of the national bestseller, Gold is a Better Way. Just text the word better to 48542 to get your copy. That's BETTER to 48542. By the time you drive home, this simple step may save the future value of your retirement. It's not too late if you're not prepared. You can take action now and claim a free copy. Text the word better to 48542. That's BETTER to 48542. Message and data rates may apply.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You too can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original pure Pau D'Arco and drink super tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.
I'm talking to this man off the air. I am so thrilled to bring him onto the show. Seriously, he has great stories. He's a great storyteller. Stanley Howard Mazin, he's had this incredible life, really, in showbiz, dancing. A Dancer in Depth, Paragraphs from a Theater Life. That's the name of his book. Stan, your book is fascinating. How did you get into the biz?
Well, how did I get into the biz? I'm from South Philadelphia, and when I was a kid, my parents sent me and my older sister to dance school until we ran out of money. And then in high school, we did a show called Carousel. Every high school needs male bodies to act as dancers. Talent has nothing to do with it. They just need the male bodies. And all my friends were singers. I never considered myself a singer. They were in the glee club. They got into the show and they said, well, you danced when you were a kid. Just, you know, get into the show. Well, I got into the show and I found out there was a little natural talent there. So when I went to college, I was taking mathematics. I was going to be a math teacher, and I was getting a little older, and the seed was already planted in my brain. And then I thought, well, I'm getting a little long in the tooth. If I don't leave college and try to do this, I will never, you know, I'll miss that opportunity. So I quit college. I got a job cleaning a dance studio. And they made me take all the classes that I could. In 6 months, they turned me into a teacher. And that's when I really learned to dance, by teaching. And I stayed there for 2 years, and we were teaching a convention in New York. So I said, I'm going to stay in New York. And that started my 48-year career dancing.
Wow, and you've had some incredible experiences on film, too, you know, from The Wedding Planner, Mame, The Backup Plan, etc., and The Blues Brothers. And you had a great story about John Belushi. Tell everybody about that.
A dream. First of all, I am a little square when it comes to drugs. My younger sister had a problem that way, so that basically kept kept me clean from drugs. But John, I always thought I had heard his reputation, and I thought, oh, well, he, you know, he just takes drugs all the time. I did a little bit in Bob's Country Bunker, where they have the mesh and people were throwing bottles. I had nothing to do with him personally, but in the audience, when they started to play Rawhide, I got on top of this table with a red cap, and I was dancing, tap dancing, and then I fell off. So I did my job, and then Friday night, we finished Friday night, and he sought me out while I was packing up to leave. He says, man, you did such a fabulous job. And I thought, oh, my God, he took the time to even pay attention to what I was doing. That was great. So that was on a Friday. On Monday, I wanted to return the tape to Carlton Johnson, who was the choreographer, who didn't tap. That's why he asked me to do it, because he wanted a little tap number up there. And
wow.
So I went to the studio, Mara Landis, where they were rehearsing, and I stuck my head in the door. And Carlton was working with Aretha Franklin, and Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi were in the corner by the window. And I just stuck my head in to show Carlton the cassette that I wanted to return. John saw me. He left Dan, came up to the door, and he said, again, I want to thank you, and shook my hand. You did such a terrific job. Changed my outlook on what we hear about stars completely. No matter what he did recreationally, he was straight when he was working.
Yeah,
he was really level-headed. Yeah,
wow,
so he was just a dream.
How about that? And you also, for over 10 years, you were on the Carol Burnett Show. What was that? That's an iconic show. What was that like?
A dream, because for me, I get a little bored doing the same thing all the time. And every week we were doing different choreography. Plus, on that show, every two or three weeks, if they had a part with just a few lines, like five lines or less, they're called under fives, they would give them to the dancers rather than hire an actor. And I got to do a lot more acting because the director liked my acting more than he liked, I guess, a lot of the other guys. So I was very fortunate that I got to do a lot of little bits and everything. So
yeah.
I loved that. And she was such a dream. She's such a dream to work with, Carol.
Oh, I bet. Broadway
Absolutely.
Shows. What was your favorite Broadway show?
Well, I have a story about Cheetah Rivera. My second Broadway show was a show called Bajour with Cheetah Rivera, Herschel Bernardi, Nancy Dussault. I was in the chorus, but I was understudying the role opposite Cheetah, and it was a romantic role. Well, the guy doing the role came from West Side Story, and the first movie, and he looked a little bit younger than her. So when we auditioned for the role, I got to audition for the role, and I got it for the understudy. Well, I was leaving, getting ready to leave the show, and two little stories, but the second one was the best one. 1 week before I left the show to do Bernardo in West Side Story for a whole summer with Christopher Walken playing Riff, because he was a dancer before he was an actor. 1 week before I left the show, the guy doing the role left the theater. So they had to use me until they replaced me because they couldn't, they wouldn't let me on my Bernardo contract, which was just as well because the show only lasted another 3 weeks, but West Side lasted the whole summer. So, I got to go on with her and she was such a dream to work with. I had a song with her. I had a scene with her and I had a dance with her. And the song, I felt her and I never considered myself a singer. I felt her hold back. She could do everything, Cheetah, everything beautifully. I felt her hold back and carry me right through the song. Absolutely. The scene was no problem because I was, and the dance was no problem. But the scene, it's a scene where I grab her. We have a fight, and I grab her by the nape of the neck, and I throw her, like, across, and then we come up to each other, like we're going to kill each other, and we go into this mad, passionate kiss. Funny story. The first night that I did it, this was when I took over the role. The first night that I kissed was like cardboard. Okay? Lips touching, that's it. Cardboard. The second performance, her mouth opens. My mouth opens. I'm just following Cheetah. Third performance, I'm feeling a little tongue there. I'm really feeling, so I reciprocate. The fourth performance, it is a mad, passionate French kiss. It's wild. I loved it. I loved it. That night, after the show, her secretary, I think her name was Joan, came up to me and said, Stan, Cheetah is afraid that the people in the first rows might be getting uncomfortable because the kiss is so real. And I said, I'm only taking it from her. Honest to God, Joan, I'm only taking it from her. And she said, well, she would just like you to calm it down a little bit. I said, absolutely. The next performance, back to cardboard.
Oh, I love it.
That's a funny story.
That's a great story.
I love Cheetah, and she loves her dancers. She's just a phenomenal woman.
So again, the name of the book, A Dancer in Depth, Paragraphs from a Theater Life. Yes. We're speaking with Stanley Howard Mason. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I'm very honest about everything about my life, my sexuality, my experiences, everything. But the main thing is that if I can write a book, anybody can write a book. Everyone's story is interesting to some people. Everyone's story. So I wanted to encourage people not to be afraid to put down their experiences on paper. And the second thing is, I want young people to know that whatever problems they have with their sexuality, just be yourself and be honest with everything. And you'll be fine. And you're never alone. Even though in the book, I repeat a couple times, there's that expression, no man is an island. Well, I believe every man is an island. No one knows what is going on in your brain. Every minute. No one knows that. So that's what I feel. But I wanted everybody just to live their life fully. The glass is always half full, and sometimes it takes work to keep it half full. And that's my outlook on life.
Oh, that's such a great outlook, and that's served you well since you started your career and probably before that as well. It was delightful having you on, Stan. Thanks so much.
Kate, I appreciate it so much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wow, so exciting to hear some of the people that he worked with. It really is an interesting book. Thanks to all of you for listening to this interview and this show. Make it count, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to give you a URL that can and will change your life. You will simply investigate it and look into it for your own self. Do your own research. This is an absolute 360 win for GCN, for American Tax Solutions, and for you. Ladies and gentlemen, these are top tax lawyers that will deliver you super service very, very quickly and change your life. The average person can save up to 90% on their taxes. Visit GCNTaxCut.com. That's GCNTaxCut.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Marusso reporting. The Florida deputy has resigned after being caught on camera handcuffing a pregnant woman at gunpoint during a traffic stop. Deputy Jason DeSue stopped Ebony Washington for speeding and then got angry when Washington drove to a well-lit area to pull over. Deputy DeSue handcuffed the mother of three at gunpoint as her children watched from the car. Washington said she blames herself for speeding, but she was shaken by the incident.
I was so nervous, so scared. I mean, the gun part, it was just extreme for me.
Police say a potential mass shooting was averted by alert witnesses at a concert Friday night in Washington State. Witnesses told police they saw a man seeming to breathe in something from a balloon and then load two 9mm guns from the trunk of his car at the Gorge Amphitheater near George Washington. He didn't get in. Arrested on suspicion, Jonathan Moody, 30 years old, and nobody got hurt. This is USA Radio News. Mexican officials called the 2014 disappearance of 43 students a state crime that was covered up by the government in another damning assessment of the previous administration's actions regarding one of Mexico's worst human rights atrocities. This year will be the deadliest on record for journalists in Mexico, with 18 killed so far, Human Rights Organization Article 19 said in a recent report. A potential tropical cyclone is churning off the Gulf Coast of Texas. Molly McCollum, who is a meteorologist with the Weather Channel, says parts of Texas could see up to 3 to 5 inches of rain.
The problem is we've been very dry, and when the rain starts to fall, it's falling on very dry soil. So we could see some of that initially start to run off and cause some flash flooding issues both Monday and extending into Tuesday morning. But these are places like Dallas, Houston, Waco that desperately need the rain.
This is USA Radio News.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over 1 million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type, and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
Megan Dilley joins us now. She's written a book called A Poetic Journey Through PTSD. Megan, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kate.
So tell me about your background and what led you to writing this book.
So I'm actually a physical therapist in New Jersey. I work mainly in outpatient physical therapy, but it's attached to a hospital. And during the heightened part of COVID, obviously it's not over, but during the heightened part in April 2020, a lot of the staff who were we were not treating that many outpatients. We were redeployed to different areas of the hospital. And unfortunately, at that time, I unknowingly got redeployed to the makeshift morgue, which is where the bodies who had died were placed because there was nowhere to put them. And I did that on April 6, 2020. And at the time, I thought I was okay, and then I kind of just didn't know what really hit me. I'm used to seeing a lot, and I've been through a lot, and just seeing this and being through this kind of put me in the state of PTSD.
Yeah, wow. So going through that, I mean, you had no idea what hit you. You didn't expect that to happen, right?
No. I mean, at the time, I was supposed to be redeployed somewhere else, and when I got there, they actually were like, oh, do you mind moving the bodies? And I'm kind of like that person that doesn't always know how to say no, and other people were doing it. I felt like I should help out because that time was just so crazy around here anyway. We in general didn't really know what had hit us, and I was like, okay, sure. And then I got out there and I was like, whoa, like again, I didn't know what hit me, and you know, finished it, did the day there, drove home, and was like, okay, I guess, you know, I'll be okay. It's no big deal. And then just started getting these terrible triggers. And I'm not like an overly emotional person, but I started like crying every day, and I just didn't really know what was going on in my head.
And so that happens to you, and what do you do to combat that?
I mean, initially, like, I kind of told my supervisor, director, and I kept working to kind of put it out of my head, but things weren't getting any better. He had given me the number for a therapist, but I was like, I'm fine, you know, I'll get through this, whatever, it's no big deal. And then things just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and I just didn't know what was going on. I've never experienced anything like this before. And so I called the psychologist, the therapist, who's been great for me, and she just kind of really saved me with everything, because I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know how to help myself at this point. And I was continuing to work, but I was still getting these triggers, and I was seeing things, and I was just, noise was so loud. And just going into like a CVS, I would walk in and I would hear a refrigerator noise, but I didn't get that the connection between why that was a trigger and just hearing that noise. And even though it wasn't what I did that day, just the fact that I was in a refrigerator moving bodies and I heard this noise, it's just that connection is an instant trigger.
Yeah. So for you, and we're going to talk about, obviously, A Poetic Journey Through PTSD, which you can get on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But does that give you more understanding of people that struggle with PTSD? Because, wow, all of a sudden you get that curveball and you have no idea what's going on and you need help.
Yeah, and it's something, obviously, I think most people are aware of through war veterans who are involved in seeing a lot of death and seeing these horrific things that they deal with, and then they come back from battle and have these symptoms where, you know, you hear a gunshot and it's just that oversensitivity to things, or you hear something that sounds like a bomb and you like duck and cover. And obviously my case is different, but post-traumatic stress disorder is very much a part of healthcare. Firefighters deal with it. Police officers deal with it. Just from seeing trauma over and over again, this happened to be one instant in my case that kind of set it off. But it's definitely common in other professions.
So you write this book, and tell us about this book and why you decided to go on that journey of calling it A Poetic Journey Through PTSD and putting it out there in the world.
So before I became a physical therapist, I was an English major. I have my BA in English, and I would say every time I did have hard times or hardships, I'm kind of very introverted and I wouldn't really talk about it with people. So I would turn to poetry and writing because I didn't get things out. And this was the same case in this instance. The August after everything happened, I mean, I was journaling, but the August after April 2020, I began to start writing poetry. Things just were in my head. I had to get them out in a different way. And that's when the book started. I would write about a poem a month. And, you know, when I got to the end of it, I mean, I thought about publishing, but not really. It's, you know, I just wanted to get the poems out for me, but I had, you know, shared it with a couple people and they're like, oh, you really should maybe think about publishing this, you know, getting out for yourself, but also it can help families who don't really understand people who are going through PTSD, and also other people who are dealing with it. Because, like, when you think of the symptoms, I felt a bit crazy. The noise hypersensitivity that I had that I've never experienced before, and panic attacks, and I've never had this in my life. And I have seen things, and I've seen things in the hospital setting, and I've had a lot of physical injuries and things, sports injuries, and dealt with things. But this was just a totally different animal and something I had never experienced before. And when you're going through it, it's really hard to understand yourself what you're going through, but also to have other people understand what you're going through. And that is difficult because you're like, you tell people, but I tell things. I'm like, oh, I'm going through a panic attack, or oh, that noise is really bothering me. But I talk pretty calmly when I say things. So people are like, yeah, right. You know, they don't get how much this can affect people because you don't show it.
Wow, well said. So from the book, do you have a favorite poem or a favorite line from a poem or something that you just remember that you wrote and it really just stuck with you?
I have a poem. I mean, I can start with one because I think it kind of shows the emotions that you feel and the hypersensitivities that I had, especially with noise. So I was going to start with the Beautiful Symphony.
Let's hear it. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. So the Beautiful Symphony. It starts with a single noise, so slight. A car zooms by. Few hear it. Then another with a single motor that sounds like a drone. Gets louder and louder. More noise chimes in a beautiful symphony. But not to some. It evokes fear, irritation, and the volume can't be turned down. There is no place of solace as you try to press on. It gets worse. It isolates because no one else hears it. But even in isolation, it blares. It pounds in your head. You want to turn it off, slow it down, but can't until you find satisfying noises of peace in nature's path. A bird chirping, a brook calling, which soothes you for at least the moment. With the beautiful symphony of lyrics from another time, where do you find your beautiful symphony?
Wow, that really is truly a gift to anybody who picks up your book and reads it or anybody that reads that poem in general. Well done. And so this was just your feelings. Like you said, you wrote a poem a month.
Yeah, a poem a month, and then I got them all down. I reworked them a little bit, but I kept them pretty close to the original form, pretty raw. Not always the easiest thing to read, but just very realistic to what I was going through, and I'm guessing other people have gone through with PTSD.
Yeah. What do you hope people take away from reading A Poetic Journey Through PTSD?
I hope it will reach an audience of people who maybe suffer from PTSD, to show that, you know, some of the symptoms that they're going through are not abnormal, and other people can relate and deal with that, because that's something I didn't really have when I was diagnosed. And I wish I had somebody else who could kind of be like, oh, I have similar things, similar symptoms. And then also, obviously, for families of people with PTSD, it kind of gives a little more insight, especially when read or heard out loud, of what someone is going through, because it was very life-changing for me. I felt like a totally different person after this. And like I said, I thought I was fine. And then things just, I'd never experienced this, and I felt like a different person. Like, it just, yeah, I'm definitely doing much, much better. But it's, I think the other thing about it that I wanted to get out there is, a lot of times, you know, you have an injury. I did kind of write a poem about this, but you have an injury and, you know, you have therapy. I'm a therapist. You do rehab and it gets better. But PTSD definitely comes in waves and it gets better. But anytime you add more stress to your life or overdo in some way, it just gets worse and worse and worse, and you can't shut it off.
Wow.
And that's a little different, being more of like a mental illness versus a physical, which I deal with on a daily basis with patients. Just getting that understanding. I'm a pusher by nature, and just being like, you know what? Once I start getting symptoms, I need to back off. Even if other people don't see them, you know, right. you need to stop, or else it just escalates and then you can't stop it.
Wow. Incredible. We have just a couple of seconds left. Tell us your website.
My website is www.megadillyauthor.com.
Wonderful. And you can get the book on Amazon, there, Barnes & Noble. Megan, thank you so much.
I really appreciate it, Kate. Thank you so much for the interview.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Let's face it, food shortages are a real threat now. Supply chain breakdowns, inflation, fuel prices, global conflicts, fertilizer cutbacks, farmers being encouraged not to plant. The stage is set for the peanut butter to hit the fan. But for some reason, Americans are still in denial about food shortages. Listen, we don't take risks with other things in our lives, so why take risks with your food security? Those who know what's coming are using today to prepare. Millions of Americans have purchased Ready Hour emergency food from My Patriot Supply, the brand people look for when they're ready for real preparedness. MyPatriotSupply.com is America's largest preparedness company. Get stocked up on emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage to get you through tough times ahead. Your other choice is to stand in government food lines hoping for a handout. As we both know, that's not an option. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Sierra Ice. We have Larry Nelson with us. Larry, thanks for joining us. Tell me about the road to writing Sierra Ice. How'd this all come about?
Well, I wrote Sierra Ice. You know, this is my third book. The first two books were basically instruction manuals for golfing, but the Sierra Ice, I basically wrote that as a direct result of an article I was reading in a scientific magazine regarding the manufacture of heavy equipment during World War II, heavy armament. And so I said to myself, how the heck do you think they manufactured major guns, tanks, and aircraft engines and so forth? That takes a major manufacturing industry to do that. So I looked into it, and what I came up with was the fact that this is something that most people don't know anything about. In fact, there's a few things in there that nobody knows about. The fact that World War II probably never would have transpired or taken place the way it did unless they had the kind of manufacturing equipment that was available, or not available, I say, to the basic manufacturing industry. So I looked into that, and when I got the information I was looking for, I decided, hey, this sounds like it might be a good book, so I wrote a book on it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You talk about, we start 1943. You talk about the cargo ship. You talk about that journey. You talk about that destination. You talk about what's happening on the other end. What was the most fascinating part to you in this story that you pulled together?
Well, let me give you an idea of what transpired in this whole thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the book itself was concerned, the cargo ship was basically loaded at a port in the Belgian Congo, and then it was basically taken over to Cape Town, South Africa, for the final journey. And the reason they did that is because they didn't want anyone to know exactly what was in that cargo. And when I got to Cape Town, they basically changed the crew entirely for the final destination, which was port in the United States. So the new cargo, including the ship's commanding officer, was not informed of what was on that ship until they were at sea after leaving Cape Town. And again, the reason again was to maintain the secrecy so nobody knew what was in the cargo holds. So along with their assigned cargo, and unknown to the ship's commanding officer or the crew, were two large sealed metal containers. And when the ship reached its final destination, which was basically in San Francisco, those containers were secretly removed from the ship and transferred to an armored car. They were to be moved to a storage place in San Francisco, so they were secured properly so that nobody could get a hold of them. Now, during the transport of those containers, the armored car was forced off the road, and the crew basically was shot, and the containers were stolen. And a detailed investigation of what occurred failed to recover the containers, nor did they identify those responsible for the robbery. So what actually happened that day in November didn't come to light for 75 years later when a Stanford student who was doing research on his PhD inadvertently came across a misplaced letter in a Holocaust Museum file, which outlined the specific details of the 1943 robbery. So, curious as to whether what was in the letter was actually fact, he decided to look into it when he got home. And shortly after he started looking into it, he disappeared. Now, his parents reported him missing to the police, but they were told that their policy is on missing persons. They don't look into missing persons for a period of time because the person normally winds up coming back to where they were supposed to be. So the resulting investigation by the private detective resulted in an attempt on his life and the murder of numerous other people and other individuals who were knowledgeable of what happened on that particular day in 1943. So when he basically got into it, they found that they had a criminal organization that had been operating for 75 years. And when they finally did the final investigation, they got everybody straightened out. All these people were arrested, and the organization was taken down, and all the people that were responsible for what happened were arrested and thrown in jail. So that's basically the background in the book itself.
Wow, was it fun for you to write this story, especially after you tripped onto it by reading something and then looking into it further?
Yeah, it was, Kate, because it took me 3 years to do it, though. I was working at the time, and whenever I had a chance, I'd sit down and write a little bit. Now, when the coronavirus came around, that's when I decided it was time to finish it. But it was it took a lot of good research on what was going on, because the particular cargo that was carried across both Germany and the United States were in a position where if they were not able to grab a hold of what was needed to do this manufacturing, the war would come to an end. Neither Germany nor the United States would be able to continue the war. So it was something that both of them were after. And in looking at that, I got involved with Winston Churchill, I got involved with Roosevelt, and I got involved with all other guys, with the people in Germany and everything else. So it was interesting to go into it and research it.
Right, and then write the characters and turn it into a story. That's the other part of it. You have the research, but then you also have to have the ability to weave the story. And so you were able to do that. And that's different from the two manuscripts you did before, because, like you said, they were on golf.
Yeah, those were two basic. Yeah, the reason I got into the golf manuscript is I was playing golf with one of my friends one day, and I gave him some advice on something he did wrong, and he said, "Well, if you're so good at golf, why don't you write a book on it?" So I did. So I wrote the Left-Hander's Golf Manual, and then after I wrote that one, I wrote the Right-Hander's Golf Manual. So both of those are, like you say, they're both available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and so forth. But this is the one that I got involved in because I couldn't figure out. You take a ship, for example, like a battleship, and you look at the guns in that ship and you wonder, how could they possibly manufacture those particular gun barrels that were so long and so thick? And that's what I think I got into it. And it did take a special type of tool to do that, which both Germany and the United States were after. And if they hadn't gotten those, World War II never would have happened.
Wow, which is just wild to think about that. What do you hope people take away from, and you're saying some of it, but what do you hope people take away from reading your novel, Sierra Ice?
Well, for anybody that reads it, I think they'll find that when they get to the end of that thing and find out exactly what was needed to make those particular armaments, that nobody really had ever told anybody how it was actually done. It was a top secret at the time the war was going on as to how it was done. And that didn't come out until after the war was over.
Yeah, so obviously that piques the curiosity, no question. So where do you go from here? First, we have what you did in the golf world, and because your buddy's goading you there. Then this, a novel, I can't imagine you're done. Are you going to write something else?
Well, I have an idea for one, yeah. It's basically called The Mall Abduction. It's a story about a kidnapping at a big mall in California. And the gentleman that's the hero in the Sarah Ice book is also the one that gets involved in trying to find the person that was abducted. So yeah, that's another one I'm thinking about. I've got a few pages already written on that one.
Good for you. Well, Sierra Ice, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Larry Nelson. Good luck with the book, and thank you for coming on.
It's also at Walmart, too, Kate, too.
All right, so you can get it there, too, as well. Thanks, Larry. Wow, such an interesting tale. I love what I said to him, that he took something that was real, something a lot of people don't know, and then turned that research and what he found out and turned it into a novel to make it that much more interesting for people to read. So thanks to Larry for that interview and all of you for listening to the show. Make it count, everybody.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. Drinksupertea.com.